So, here comes Mary to speak on step three.
Hi, y'all. Nice to see you, Zoomers. Nice to see you all tonight, too. I am an alcoholic, and my name is Mary. And my sobriety date is January 2nd, 1997, and my home group is Lovely Ladies. Friday night, 7:30, 10th and Powell. So come and visit us anytime. Tonight, we're talking about step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. That's a pretty big package. All of those ideas in one sentence. And we're going to unpack it tonight. So, in the 12 and 12, we start out with every man and woman who has joined AA and intends to stick has, without realizing it, made a beginning on step three. Isn't that reassuring? Even if we get here and we struggle, we still, in our own way, have already said yes to one, two, and three. And that was my experience. The honesty that is needed in step one, I can't. The hope that something will save us in step two, he can. Comes this step of faith where we are tonight with step three. I'll let him. I'll step to the side. That's never been an easy thing for me to do. Anybody who knows me, that's not an easy one. But our instructions for step three in the big book begin in chapter five, when, in How It Works, we hear. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. From there, we move on to being blessed by the suggestions of these 12 steps, which are just loaded with references about that power greater than ourselves. We are constantly reminded that we are out of the driver's seat, or we should be. And then, following that, are the three clear, pertinent ideas. And they are clear. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Step one. That B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Step two, and where we are tonight, that God could and would if he were sought. Step three. I have always felt a deep sense of peace when I hear that read and how it works. There's just something that is reassuring. But it isn't without some work at seeking that God that we know will save us from ourselves. It's a kind of a coming home, a confirmation that I will be okay. Any situation will work itself out in God's time, no matter what the issue is at hand. When I remember, one, what my problem is, two, that I can't fix it, and three, that my higher power is on the job. And if I'm willing to surrender and stand down, he'll do his job. How can we not know that we have finally found the right place to be? Last week's spiritual virtue was all about hoping something other than ourselves could relieve us of the pain that we all felt when we got here in body, mind, and spirit. Even though we believe that there is that power of God and that that is the solution or the answer, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're always willing to allow him to do what he needs to do. Step three suggests that we make a decision to put the power that work, to put that power to work in our lives. The definition of decision, you know I love definitions. A conclusion or resolution reached after consideration. So it isn't a spur of the moment, it's a decision that I feel is right. God knows we've made some that we did feel that were right and were seriously wrong. But remember, we can't see, feel, touch, hear, smell any of our higher power to really know what this power is. And that's where step three's spiritual virtue of faith makes itself apparent to us tonight. A definition of faith: a firm belief in something for which there is no proof. And really, there is no physical proof that a higher power exists or how it can possibly benefit us. We only know that it is real for each and every one of us, independent of each other, by our own desperate need, by utilizing that power, and therefore the subsequent changes that come about in our lives, our perspectives, our attitudes, the situations that we live in. That's the only way we know that something else is in control. Okay, so we've just come off of step two, where we explored that spiritual virtue of hope. Because, God knows, we need something to hope for, to save us from how we have been living. And in the big book, we're reminded, on page 60, the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody. Even though our motives are good, most people try to live life by self-propulsion. It goes on then further to describe how we work so hard at arranging all the dialogue, the scenery, the actors, the lights, and that if everything ran like we'd want it to, like we expect it to, the show would be great. It would be just the best thing going. But, and we know life happens. We also call it something else that happens. And things don't go our way. Our attitude, our mood, our feelings about ourselves change. And we end up feeling resentful. We are in self-pity, and we're obsessed with fear. So, we kind of thought we had all the right choices for ourselves. Maybe not. The 12 and 12 offers us some truth about ourselves. We are certain that our intelligence, backed by willpower, can rightly control our inner lives and guarantee us success in the world we live in. This brave philosophy, wherein each man plays God, sounds good in the speaking, but it still has to meet the acid test. How well does it actually work? One good look in the mirror ought to be the answer enough for any alcoholic. Such truth. Such raw truth. If we look at ourselves after a night of or a morning after, it doesn't matter how we've come into these rooms, either with a high bottom or a low bottom. We're here because nothing else worked to help ease that soul pain. And we come in, we're struggling with remorse and guilt and bitterness and hatred of others and financial insecurity. The panic that we may be feeling over the loss of a job, a career, our families. The only way we're going to survive is to take responsibility for our selfishness and to ask God to remove this shortcoming from ourselves. Joe McHugh reminds us in the steps we took, It seems there is no way we can overcome self-will without God's help. This principle is very simple. If we realize that there are only two wills on earth, human will and God's will, then self-will can only be overcome by God's will. Self-will cannot overcome self-will. Oh, we've been trying to make ourselves better and better, and we can't. I said it last week. A truly sick mind cannot heal itself. Self-knowledge cannot keep us sober, much less happy. In the Big Book, page 62, I love it. It almost screams out when it's written, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. We invariably find that at some time in the past, we made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Such truth, you know, and we can't read those words in this big book until we have surrendered and laid down the armor of our hearts and our minds that we know anything. We have to choose to allow that higher power to heal and direct our lives. Awareness of the fact that the whole world doesn't revolve around us, that was a rude awakening for me. In step three, we're presented with some concrete suggestions as to how, one, we get to make this decision, and two, to possibly find ways to conform our will, which is our thoughts, and our lives, which is our actions, to that path that the higher power wants us to be on. Page 62 of the big book. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to stop playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in the drama of life, God was going to be our director. Hallelujah! I don't have to do that anymore. If I'm convinced, though, by my life experiences that there is no sufficient power in me to fix, alter, change my miserable existence, am I willing to choose that power that I know that is that I have an inkling of way down deep inside of me? How do I access it? How do I get to that power? Step three invites, suggests, implores us to make a decision to turn our self-centered choices into becoming other-centered, from self-centeredness to life-centeredness. Could this be another way of how a spiritual awakening happens? As a solution to the spiritual malady of alcoholism? Could choosing a life directed by a power greater than ourselves actually offer us that aha moment? Could, in my preparing a comfortable, I'll bet, final bed for Fiona on January 2nd, have been me being saved by my higher power, knowing that my sponsor would have the right ideas on how I could stop hurting so badly? Could that have been the spiritual awakening that I had to trust not only her, but the God of my understanding? Fiona has definitely given me much to ponder in how God orchestrated my final surrender. A little guinea pig helped me along the way. Selfish and self-centered willfulness are all blocks to God's access to us and us to Him. In the 12 and 12, we may have faith, which is necessary, but faith alone can avail nothing. We can have faith, yet keep God out of our lives. Also, this step reminds us that the decision to turn is not to God, but to the care of God. Offering that God has always been there, ready and waiting for me to see Him. If I could only but let go of that monkey grip control that I've always had on my choices and my actions. I'm reminded that that's how they used to catch monkeys, as they had a jar and it was a small open jar, and they would put a delicious fruit down inside. And the monkey would go in and grab that fruit, and then it couldn't get its hand out of the jar, and it was therefore caught. That sounds like me. That sounds like my description. All that monkey had to do was to let go, and he could run away. Step 3 allows me to let go of that delicious fruit that I think is going to save me. If I let go of it, I can be free. I can go to the power. I can acknowledge that power that has helped me. God caring for us. That is a basic need of the human condition. Wanting to be cared for, seen, acknowledged. That was a very strong need for me in my addiction. I had every creature comfort. I had a very high bottom. I had everything I would ever want. A loving husband, great children. My parents were, my mom was still alive. But I didn't care for myself. And deep down, I truly did not feel any comfort, any solace. The idea that I was the one who abandoned God in my addiction and not the other way around, I remember that being a startling fact, that I had turned around. And I do believe it was my sponsor, that reminded me that God is everywhere. I just have to be able to want to know Him. Had I made that selfish decision, I walked away because of my shame and my embarrassment and my fear, because I knew in my addiction I was a failure. There was no doubt about it. And what would care the very best for me but my higher power as I understand Him? Why? Because He knows me the best. He knows all those nooks and crannies. He knows all those pitfalls. So we're back to how to access that power. We need to make a decision about how my higher power fits into my life. Our addiction used to be the primary focus, and we organized our life totally around what we wanted and how we were going to get it. Now, our spirituality and relationship with the God of our understanding and our turning to Him to care for me and to guide me into the right choices about my life and my thoughts, that had become my new important focus. We can decide to go with the tide of life instead of struggling against it, choosing to participate in my recovery rather than fighting it or just wanting for it to happen. I remember that there was that level of apathy in those couple of years that it took me to get here and stay here. I just assumed it was going to happen. Even though, you know, I had worked the steps, I just had an air of, okay, bring it on, instead of, okay, how can I work for this? And most importantly, I am able to give up all knowing all the answers and being the boss of all, because I knew it all. I was the boss of my whole little world and all the people in it, and it was not a fun place to be. The 12 and 12 refers to this step as a call for affirmative action and the surrendering of the control that we were sure that we needed to have and to get ahead. We're encouraged to let go and release ourselves into that stream of life. When I think about that, I think of the lazy river at Waldemere. You know, you just get in and you float along. There ain't nothing bothering you. It's comfortable. It's cool. It's in the water. It's in the stream of life. 12 and 12 says, he needs to develop the quality of willingness. Fortunately, we who have tried it and with equal misgivings can testify that anyone at all can begin to do it. We can further add that a beginning, even the smallest, is all that is needed. Just like with what I opened with, all we need is just to begin these steps and to say yes in some way, shape, and form. That move from willfulness to willingness means giving up the best idea that we've had. How do I get to willingness? But through the portal of surrender. Surrender, another description, means to cease resistance. When I think of surrendering, I remember attending a retreat out at Camp Lenota, and we did this trust walk. And so you, with the help of a person I have barely just met, I am blindfolded and I'm taken outside, and this person guides me up and down stairs and around trees and through rocky terrain. And I remember going all the way out to the edge where you could hear the lake roaring. And this person that I was lucky enough to have had as my guide explained everything that was happening, where I was going, what terrain was I going to be in, what foot did I need to move forward with, when did I need to pause. I was able to trust, and I was comfortable in that level of surrendering. By the time we were done and we ended up back at the big building, she could have taken me anywhere and I'd have been all right with my eyes closed. Has anybody here had an experience with a trust fall? Yeah, yeah. Another really cool a thing, and I'm sure it was a retreat. So Catholic, you know, so many retreats. And you stand with your eyes closed or blindfolded and you cross your arms, and there's people. I remember only having a couple of people behind me and just falling backwards. It gives you the thrill of a roller coaster, of a really fast roller coaster. I was always caught. I was always safe. These people, just like my higher power, took a great pleasure in making sure that I successfully fell. Well, when I'm working on an issue, a resentment, a person, place, or thing that I know that I have no control over, I do imagine in morning prayer of myself falling back into the arms of my higher power. And I let go. I let go of that tension and that fear that I may be feeling. And this is how I daily surrender those that I love, because I have a tendency, even in prayer, to clutch and to kind of, okay, well, now this person needs this. No, shut up, Mary. Just fall back. And I get great peace from falling back. Surrender is the balancing point, the sanity and serenity we receive when we feel secure in our higher power. I do have to admit to you all that in my research, I found that the word surrender does not appear in the original first 164 pages of the Big Book. But I make no apologies for using it, because it's a word that I relate to as a picture in my mind. And for me, it has that physical manifestation of letting go. at this point in the big book, as we know, that step one is the foundation. Step two, the cornerstone. Bill calls the willingness to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Step three, the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. And right after we receive that freedom through the arch, in the big book, we receive many gifts. As it reads, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. Reborn means brought back to life, resurrected. Isn't that the feeling of freedom that we can feel after we've walked through this process of honesty, step one, trust, step two, and now faith, that possibly we can have some joy in living? When we say yes to life, we're living with willingness and surrender. Life now becomes our partner, not a thing to control with or be controlled by. There is no set time that it takes us to work the steps, but work the steps we must. All right, so we've named our higher power, we've embraced it, we've chosen to cooperate with it and care for it. We learn how, with its help, to surrender our will and our life in return for the help in continuing with all the remaining steps. We're claiming our true power, leaving behind willfulness and entering into willingness. We're committed to spiritual growth. Now we seek the inner wisdom to know the difference between what we can control and what we can't. And for that, we're offered a prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. But, big but here, in step three, all we've done is make a decision. You know the story about the frogs on the log. There's three of them, and one of them decides to jump off. So how many frogs are there on the log?
Three.
That frog only made a decision, the actions of which we will never know about him. So we need to remember that step three, one, which we may need to consistently repeat. It's just offering us a decision. It's a beginning, an opportunity to practice that faith. Action must follow decision. In steps 4 to 12, we'll be taking some specific actions that will result in, quote, the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. And no discussion of step 3 would be complete without the third step prayer. Please pray with me. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help, of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. That was great. Now we get to the question and answer session of tonight's speaker series. So if you have a question, raise your hand right up front.
First of all, Mary, thank you. I didn't know the word surrender was not in the first part of the big book.
No.
Thank you for letting us know that. That's something new. How do you work step three with a sponsee who is an atheist or an agnostic?
Well, maybe you could answer that for me. Because I've already worked step two with them, I trust that they know that the higher power is not themselves. And so any power that they need, want, however they identify it, is going to have to work for them. And like I said last week, that is a process that can change, it can move, it can be different from week to week. So I allow for that person to be an independent thinker, and you know, life is going to show that person and myself how they're surrendering and how they're allowing for a higher power to be their source.
Next question.
Hi, Mary. Thank you so much. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bridget.
So when going through the steps, we go through 1, 2, 3, and we go through 4, and so on. But in my experience, I find that sometimes, I'm speaking about myself now, I might deteriorate in my serenity and end up back maybe at step two, which we mentioned last week, that sometimes we can get back into crazy thinking. And do you think that that is something that happens to most humans? That, you know, in my experience, I go through the steps and I think I'm really doing well, and then, you know, something comes in like on the side and just kind of bites me, and I go and do my old thing, which is like being sarcastic or, you know, shooting back with some kind of sassy thing. So I guess what I'm asking are kind of like contemplating that we are kind of it's a process whereby we go through, but once we do, we learn what we need to do to go back and redo that, or not. Like redo step three and then get into step four again, maybe.
Thanks,
Does that
Bridget.
Make sense?
For me, the steps are a process. I work them 1 through 12. Humanity says that our life is not going to be that easy floating on the endless river. So when we work the steps, we're always learning and utilizing new coping techniques for being that better person that we want to be. And then life kicks. There's no doubt. We get scared, we get angry, we have resentments. Fear is my biggest tripping point. Fear of how I'm seen, or fear for my children, or fear of the world sometimes. And I just have to go back. You know, I fall back into the arms of my higher power. That's why step 11 is so vital. Sought through prayer and meditation. You know, if we have habits, if we have disciplines, then we have ways of coping. We've been given those tools. And I don't know that there's a human that can work the steps and not have feelings and not have life experiences after that. Because I have worked the steps dozens of times, and I still will blow up at my husband or want to kick a dog. You know, old habits die hard. Am I that person that I used to be? I always wanted to kill my husband and kick the dog. I always did it too. I've evolved. I've changed because, you know, steps 1, 2, and 3 tell me, you know, it can't be about me. And I'm much quicker to find that out and to figure it out. And so I go to my 10th step. Once a year I do the steps, but on a regular basis I go to my 10th step to work things out and figure out what's my part in it. What part do I play?
Hi, Mary. Gretchen, alcoholic.
Hi, Gretchen.
And this is kind of taking some of what off of what Bridget was saying. First of all, thank you so much. Your analogy of the capturing the monkeys with putting their hands in the jar, I have never heard that before. And I can really relate to that. Especially when I think, you know, how many fruits out there are poisonous but look so enticing. You know? So thank you for that. And I guess kind of what I'm thinking along this lines of falling back, and I'm going to use that in literal sense for two things. You know, you talked about the trust fall and falling into, you know, the care of God, which is something else that I appreciate because I don't know that I've broken it down that way before, you know, as to thinking of just God or the care of God sounds more loving to me and comforting to me. My question is, so in terms of like a trust fall and falling into the care of God, you know, if anyone's been involved in that, it's not uncommon that, you know, when somebody starts falling back, they'll start to fall back, but then they'll like bend because they're afraid, which makes it harder to catch them. So thinking of that, you know, there are a lot of days that I start my day out like trusting in the care of God and falling and leaning into God as I understand, but then throughout the day I bend and ultimately I fall. Mm-hmm. You know, so what are some of the ways that, I know you've referred to a couple of the other steps, but maybe more so catching that in the moment or not long after the moment to lean back fully into the care of God.
Thanks, Gretchen. Oh, we're so incredibly human, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes. You know, I guess I would say that one of my best things is an amend, you know, because I'm in the wrong. My mouth, my most serious weapon that I could possibly use, and my indignation sometimes, all fear-based, you know, so if I can say, thank you, or I'm sorry, those are ways that I can immediately remedy the situation and then take it later to my 10th step to find out what triggered that. What instincts were absolutely out of whack? What do I got going on that I'm not aware of? And that's most of my time is stuff that's under my surface that I have not admitted to myself that's bugging me or has hurt my feelings. You know, amend and thank you. I think there's like three of them out there that are the best things to do in case of being human. I can't remember, but I think it would. I think those are two of them. I'm sorry. And thank you. Is that a good answer?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Anybody on Zoom want to chime in?
Well, but they all act like they're frozen.
Nobody?
Oh, no, I see eyes. I see eyes moving.
Oh, I think Lisa. Anybody else in the room? Pretty early, Kevin. Pretty early.
You can always come up with one.
Well, it's because I don't know much, that's why. Anyway, thanks again, Mary. I appreciate it. Talking about the third step, and you said we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand them. I know for myself, when I got into this program, I got to the third step. I mean, I knew more of what I didn't know God was than what I understood. So how do you work with people that come to you and go like, you hear this doorknob thing and all that other stuff, but, how do you deal with somebody that's like that? So how do you, put breadcrumbs or whatever to help them come to a better understanding of their higher power?
Thanks, Kevin. I guess I would send them home with homework.
Like what kind of homework?
Homework that would say, describe your higher power. Describe what your higher power, what you would like your higher power to do for you and what your higher power does for you. What do you know in your life that has come not as a result of your own making, but that you've been blessed with? You know, the higher power is a pretty benign thing when we don't know it. But gratitude, what am I grateful for? What do you got that you can't live without? What do you got that you're grateful that you didn't know that you could be grateful for? I think for me, that's a way that I find my higher power. And that's what I would encourage. Homework. You need to find something. You need to find a description. You need to put a face on it. You need to be able to identify some of the things in your life that you have as a result, not of your making, but that may have come as a result of you being a human and showing up.
All right, so nobody else?
Dutch. He triggered a thought.
So when working with others, and I don't know if you've ever had this situation, if you have, then based on your experience, and if you haven't, maybe how you would handle this. When talking about somebody's concept of a higher power, if somebody presented their concept and it was in great, let's just say it was entirely opposite or something that you find offensive, because I've had that happen, where somebody's concept of their higher power is so entirely in a direction that I would never go with it, and it was hard to separate my emotions and feelings about that in the situation. So have you ever had that happen? And if not, how would you handle that?
I have not. I've had people that have no higher power that don't think they need a higher power. Not that they're their own higher power, but that they just don't have anything. Again, I would ask them, and whatever they might come up with, as long as it's not them, they're the ones that have to live with whatever it is. I might not feel comfortable with it, but it's not my version, and it's not what I trust. If that person can do those things, believe in and trust, and be willing with its power to work the rest of these steps, I'm gonna believe that God's gonna have his way with them somewhere along the way, and that not that they're gonna come into anything that has to. I have no parameters for anyone, but they have to be accepting of that, you know. And however it works, as long as a sponsor, I'm not hearing, oh, I, because they can't be that higher power. And that I've heard, that I've watched, that I've seen, that I've worked with, and unfortunately, often, it doesn't stick around. But I see that it comes back. I've seen that. And for that, I'm grateful, because, you know, I'm one that had to get beat down pretty hard. I understand that. And I'm the one who hurt myself the worst about those thoughts about not being able to stay here. So,
thank you.
Yes.
All right, well, thanks, Mary. Appreciate you.